Zakharova's press conference, followed by one day, the consideration of the matter of the poisoned Russian spy in the UK by the UN Security Council. The following are the comments from the permanent representatives of China and Russia.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, China has noted the recent poisoning incident in the UK. We take note of the statements made by relevant countries on this incident. We hope that a comprehensive, objective, and impartial investigation could be conducted based on facts in accordance with relevant international rules and reach an evidence-based conclusion that can stand the test of facts and history. We hope relevant parties could properly handle this issue through appropriate channels. Thank you, Mr. President.
I thank the representative of China for his statement, and I now give the floor to the representative of the Russian Federation.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Господин председатель,
Mr. President,
вчера после распространения в Совете Безопасности письма британского премьер-министра, Соединенное Королевство запросило проведение закрытых консультаций. Мы же попросили председателя Совета Безопасности изменить формат проведения с закрытых консультаций на открытый брифинг. И сделали мы это не просто так, потому что мы хотели, чтобы все видели, что здесь происходит. Потому что в этом письме, в котором содержатся абсолютно безответственные заявления, и которые мне даже трудно комментировать в дипломатических выражениях, содержится угроза суверенному государству, постоянному члену Совета Безопасности,
towards a permanent member of the Security Council,
идут вразрез с международным правом и статьей 2.4
Устава ООН.
Мне хотелось бы понять, наши британские коллеги хотя бы это понимают. Первый вопрос, который мы хотим задать, почему представители Соединенного Королевства тащат этот вопрос в СБ, при этом игнорируя установленные процедуры, которыми Лондон в соответствии со своими международными обязательствами обязан следовать, а именно задействовав профильные организации, если речь идет об использовании на территории королевства токсичного химического. Нам, собственно, очевиден ответ на этот вопрос. Наши партнеры тянут этот вопрос на площадку СБ, потому что понимают, что настоящих экспертов в области химоружия в Гааге их доводы не убедят. То есть, в действительности, они боятся настоящего профессионального разговора на эти темы. Все это говорит только о том, что инициаторами руководят совершенно иными.
Being guided by something completely different.
Российская Федерация считает абсолютно неприемлемым голословные обвинения, изложенные в обращении премьер-министра Великобритании Терезы Мэй от 13 марта на имя генерального секретаря ООН о якобы причастности нашей страны к применению Солсбери отравляющих веществ. От нас в ультимативной форме потребовали 24-часовой срок, по сути, признаться в совершении преступления и осуществить явку с
повинной.
Мы сами языком ультиматума ни с кем не разговариваем. И с собой разговаривать в таком тоне не позволим. Но мы люди вежливые. И 13 марта направили в Foreign Office ноту, которые подтвердили непричастность России к этому инциденту и запросили образцы примененного вещества и совместное расследование. Тем более, что одна из пострадавших гражданка Российской Федерации. В этом нам было отказано.
То есть, нагнетая истерику, Лондон действует абсолютно нетранспарентно. Сегодня появились сообщения о высылке российских дипломатов и замораживании двусторонних отношений. Я, кстати, хочу спросить свою британскую коллегу, это на ООН тоже распространяется?
Lateral relations are being frozen. I want to ask my UK colleague whether this applies to the UN as well.
Появились сообщения о готовящейся кибератаке на
Россию.
Предупреждаем, все это без ответа не останется. Мы вынуждены сделать вывод, что власти Великобритании установление истины интересует в последнюю очередь, а движут ими совершенно иные мотивы. Ходы идут отточенные за последние годы приемы пропагандистской войны, рассчитанные на оказание мощного информационного воздействия на непросвещенные.
And they are trying to thus influence the public, which is very easy to influence and not well educated.
Но за этим нет никаких фактов, кроме голословных утверждений
российским
СМИ. Кстати, это далеко не первый случай совершенных при весьма туманных обстоятельствах покушений на жизнь российских граждан или выходцев из России в Великобританию, которые до сих пор не расследованы, или возглавление с которыми нам было
отказано.
Лондону для начала следовало бы разобраться с тем, что происходит на его территории. Прежде чем обвинять других, воспитанные люди обычно наводят порядок у себя дома. Мы предложили британской стороне немедленно задействовать процедуры, предусмотренные пунктом 2 статьи 9 Конвенции о запрещении химического оружия. Она предусматривает обращение за разъяснениями и предоставление запрашивающему государству-участнику ответа как можно быстрее, но в любом случае не позднее, чем через 10 дней после получения запроса. Британские коллеги знают об этом, но не спешат воспользоваться положениями Конвенции, членами которой они являются. Мы требуем предъявления материальных доказательств якобы обнаруженного российского следа в данном резонансном деле. Без этого заявление о наличии неопровержимых данных в расчет приниматься не будет. Пока ничего, кроме highly likely, мы не видели.
Until now we have not seen anything besides stating that this is highly likely.
В этой ситуации правомерно обратиться за помощью к техническому секретариату ОСКО в проведении независимого лабораторного анализа, имеющихся в распоряжении британских властей образцов и
полов.
Теперь несколько слов о химии. В Российской Федерации никакие научные исследования и опытные конструкторские разработки под условным названием «Новичок» не проводились. С начала 70-х годов в целом ряде стран реализовывались программы по созданию новых типов отравляющих веществ нервно-паралитического действия, в частности в США и Советском Союзе, под названием ВИЭКС.
And this was called VX.
В соответствии с указом президента Российской Федерации 1992 года, советские разработки в области химического оружия в России были прекращены. В 2017 году Российская Федерация завершила уничтожение всех имевшихся запасов химического оружия, что подтверждено уполномоченной международной структурой организации по запрещению
химического оружия.
Кстати, Соединенные Штаты до сих пор свой химический арсенал не уничтожили. В середине 90-х годов западные спецслужбы вывезли на Запад ряд наших специалистов,
moved to the West a number of our specialists, and their names are
well known.
And also some documentation was taken out of our country and continued their work in this area, including in the U.S. and the U.K.
Достигнутые этими странами положительные результаты по созданию новых отравляющих веществ, которые на Западе по каким-то соображениям классифицируют под общим названием «Новичок», подтверждены и отражены более чем в 200 открытых источников стран НАТО.
Эти ссылки у нас есть.
С
Собственно, идентификация отравляющего вещества, якобы примененного в инциденте, производилась в научно-техническом центре Министерства обороны Великобритании,
в населенном пункте Портендаун, на базе которого и велась разработка, а также производство химического оружия, в том числе данного типа.
Наиболее вероятным источником происхождения данного химиката являются страны, которые с конца 90-х годов по настоящее время проводятся интенсивные исследования по указанному веществу, в том числе Великобритании.
But we're not chemists here.
Я вам приведу мнение одного профессионального химика. Let me just
quote the opinion of a professional chemist.
Чтобы британские специалисты с полной уверенностью могли установить, что этот газ именно новичок, а не какой-либо иной, им обязательно нужно иметь так называемый контрольный стандарт. Чтобы доказать, что это то самое соединение, его нужно сравнить с соответствующим стандартом. Если они говорят, что это газ новичок, то у них априори есть стандарт этого вещества. Значит, есть коллекция и формула.
In other words, they have a collection and they have the formula.
Это самый важный момент во всей этой истории.
And this is the most important point in this whole story.
Если Британия так твердо уверена, что это газ новичок, if the UK is so firmly convinced this is the novichok gas, then that means that they have the samples of this
and they have the formula for this and they're capable of manufacturing that.
Господин председатель,
Mr. President,
мы живем в особое время.
We are living in a very, very special times.
На наших глазах происходят удивительные события.
In front of our eyes, incredible things are happening.
Идет процесс подмены презумпции невиновности на презумпцию вины.
Of innocence with a presumption of guilt is taking place.
Причем этот принцип уголовного права переносится на международные отношения.
Into international relations.
Вот сегодня посол Хилли,
today, Ambassador Haley, as an experienced chemist and an expert in
заявляла сегодня
area,
о преступлениях России.
Talk today about the crimes committed by Russia.
Мы знаем уже давно, что вам, чтобы установить виновных, не нужны никакие расследования.
In order to determine who is a guilty party, no investigation is needed.
В письме премьер-министра Великобритании говорится о том, что это highly likely.
It is stated that this is highly likely.
Но даже в этом вы превзошли своего верного союзника.
But even in this, you have exceeded your reliable ally.
Если для советского прокурора Вышинского признание было царицей доказательств,
prosecutor Vyshinsky thought that confession was the best kind of proof.
То теперь, по меткому выражению министра Лаврова, подозрение становится царицей доказательств.
What is the best kind of proof is suspicion.
Уже не требуется демонстрировать Совете пробирки с неизвестным
no
белым веществом.
Necessary to show to the council test tubes with unknown white substance in it.
Достаточно написать письмо, содержащее вопиющие отношения в отношении суверенной страны.
Which contains an egregious attitude towards a sovereign state.
Это же мы наблюдаем по Сирии.
And we are witnessing the same when it comes to Syria.
Теперь число нарушителей конвенции пытаются записать Россию.
Now Russia is being pushed towards the number of those who violate the convention.
В части Великобритании в незаконных вооруженных нападениях на независимое государство, в том числе с использованием ложных доказательств.
In illegal attacks on independent states, including using unsubstantiated proof.
Югославия,
Ирак, Ливия.
Это привело к неисчисленным страданиям мирного
населения. Amongst
Вы не забыли о том, что Великобритания известна как государство, прибегающее к практике целевых убийств с использованием дронов.
Which uses targeted assassinations by drones.
И слышать от вас в этом контексте инвективы в наш адрес странно.
Against us is something that is odd.
А бездоказательные, в
And when there is no proof behind them, it's all the more odd.
В юриспруденции, да и в жизни вообще есть принцип qui bono или qui prodest. То есть ищите тех, кому это выгодно. Как вы думаете, выгоден этот инцидент России накануне президентских выборов и чемпионата мира по футболу? Зато я знаю сразу несколько стран. Но я в соответствии с принципом презумпции невиновности не буду называть их по имени.
By the principle of the presumption of innocence, I will not name them.
But
I can think of a number of countries who would benefit a great deal from this incident and accusing Russia of it.
Как вы думаете, какой мотив, на который ссылается премьер-министр Великобритании в России для устранения Сергея
Скрипаля,
который после расследования дела, осуждения, отбытия срока, помилования и выдачи британским властям не представлял никакой угрозы для нашей страны. Зато он прекрасно подходит на роль жертвы. Который можно оправдать любую немыслимую ложь, грязь, черный пиар в отношении России. Мы неоднократно предупреждали, что что-нибудь в этом роде, какая-то провокация накануне известных событий может случиться. Сегодня мы свидетели того, что власти Соединенного Королевства ведут курс на сознательное очернительство России, не гнушаясь никакими
видами.
У английского классика Артура Конан Дойля, прославившего свою страну и очень популярного в России, в его рассказах о Шерлоке Холмсе есть один незадачливый и комический персонаж. Инспектор Лестрейд из Скотланд-Ярда. Он не обладает сугубым интеллектом и не владеет дедуктивным методом.
He doesn't have the method of deduction. He's not particularly smart.
Его роль оттенять необычайные детективные способности
Шерлока Холмса.
Он, Лестрейд, немедленно хватается за поверхностные следы преступления и спешит с банальными выводами, с тем, чтобы быть опровергнутым Шерлоком, который всегда находит подоплеку преступления и истинный следы
мотива.
Боже упаси меня подозревать современных сотрудников Скотланд-Ярда в
непрофессионализме.
Хотя сегодня современный Шерлок Холмс не помешал бы.
I do think that we could all stand to benefit from having a Sherlock Holmes with us today.
Но сегодня в роли коллективного инспектора Лестрейда выступают высокопоставленные члены британского правительства, которые сыпят безответственными, бездоказательными, поверхностными, чудовищными обвинениями, что имеет далеко идущие последствия. Россия призывает официальных лиц Великобритании отказаться от имперских практик XIX века,
give up on the imperial practices with belonging the 19th century, give up on ultimatums and threats, and on supported accusations, give up with the colonial habits, and get back to the area which is governed by law.
В ситуациях, подобных изложенных заявлениях Терезы Мэй, принято обращение к инструментам правовой помощи. Подытоживая, хотел бы еще раз заявить следующее. Россия не причастна к этому инциденту. Ультиматумы Лондона мы считаем ничтожными.
Be Ожидаем. Something that we cannot pay attention to, and we expect. We consider null and void.
Ожидаем,
we expect that the United Kingdom will act in strict adherence with the Convention of Chemical Weapons and other international instruments, including the European Convention on Legal Assistance on Criminal Matters, and will provide the samples of substances that the UK investigation is referring to. For joint investigation, since you are saying that they are Russian in origin.
Это не факультативное, а обязательное требование по конвенции.
And this is not an optional. This is a mandatory requirement under the convention.
Мы к такому расследованию готовы.
We stand ready for such an investigation.
Нам бояться и скрывать нечего.
We have nothing to fear. We have nothing to hide.
О механизме задействования пункта 2 статьи 9 Конвенции о запрещении химического оружия мы уже говорили. Если полученные разъяснения будут сочтены недостаточными, можно будет обратиться за содействием к руководящим органам ОСОВ. Это единственный цивилизованный вариант урегулирования вопроса. Раз уж нас абсолютно безосновательно обвинили в несоблюдении конвенции, другого пути просто нет. Бесплотного диалога специалистов различного профиля здесь не обойтись. Мы готовы к открытому и конструктивному сотрудничеству в рамках ОПЦВ.
conclusion, Mr. President, we would like to disseminate a draft statement for the press,
which sums up my statement and emphasizes the fact
that the mechanisms in Chapter 9 of the Chemical Weapons Conventions are mentioned, and we hope and expect that all members of the Council will support this. Thank you.
Finally, we close with Thursday's press briefing at the U.S. Department of State with spokesperson Heather Nauert.
A lot new, right? Okay, a couple announcements to begin with today. First, I'd like to address something that's taking place in Vienna, and that's where the UN Commission on Narcotic Drugs was held, a conference on that in Vienna. Our INL Deputy Assistant Secretary Walsh leading the U.S. delegation on the matter. Yesterday, the Commission voted unanimously to internationally control cartenafil. It's a synthetic opioid 10,000 times more powerful than morphine. The 46-0 vote means that 186 countries will be committed to strictly limit the production, the stockpiling, and the import and export of cartenafil. The dangerous substance, its legitimate use, is as an elephant tranquilizer, but it's played a deadly role in America's ongoing opioid crisis. We express our gratitude to the 45 other members present at the Commission on Narcotic Drugs that voted for the important measure. The move by the United Nations will help save American lives. The administration has placed a top priority on dealing with the opioid abuse crisis here in the United States. Our Deputy Secretary Sullivan was at the White House not long ago for a conference on that, so this is just one more part, continuation of our priority on that issue. Secondly, I'd like to highlight something that took place yesterday, and that is the White House hosted a conference with representatives from 20 countries, including Israel and many Arab states, to discuss solutions to the worsening humanitarian and economic conditions in Gaza. The conference, convened by White House Senior Advisor Jared Kushner, Special Representative for International Negotiations Jason Greenblatt, and members of the National Security Council staff and Department of State, was attended by representatives from the United Nations, the European Union, the Office of the Quartet, and the following countries: Bahrain, Canada, Cyprus, Egypt, France, Germany, Ireland, Israel, Italy, Japan, Jordan, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, Netherlands, Norway, Oman, Qatar, Sweden, Switzerland, United Arab Emirates, and the United Kingdom. I think that was a very impressive list. The White House conference built upon a meeting that was held in Cairo, Egypt last week, and will carry ideas forward to the Ad Hoc Liaison Committee, AHLC. They will hold a meeting in Brussels, Belgium at the end of the month. The administration believes that deteriorating humanitarian conditions in Gaza require immediate condition. The situation in Gaza must be solved for humanitarian reasons and for ensuring the security of Egypt and Israel. It is also a necessary step toward reaching a comprehensive peace agreement between the Israelis and Palestinians, including Palestinians in both Gaza and the West Bank. The attendees yesterday discussed concrete proposals for finding realistic, effective approaches to the challenges Gaza currently faces. White House officials presented specific project ideas developed in conjunction with NSC staff, Department of State officials, which the AHLC may seek to fund through discussions at its upcoming meeting in Brussels. The nations and entities represented at the conference have the ability to work together and make a difference. The dialogue will continue, and in the coming days, in close coordination with other stakeholders, as all parties take tangible steps toward making meaningful improvements on the humanitarian and economic situation in Gaza. And with that, I'd be happy to take your questions. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Heather. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And congratulations on your interim temporary appointment. Just logistically, in terms of the Secretary's departure, I just wanted to know if you could give us an update, if there is one to give, about the status. I understand he was in the building yesterday. He had a meeting with staff. Is he in the building today? Is he planning to come every day until the 31st, until his last day? And what's the situation
there? Certainly. The Secretary is in the building today, or at least he was as of a short while ago. He has ongoing meetings and business to attend to in wrapping up his term here at the State Department. And the plan is for him to be here as Secretary of State until the 31st, or actually I should say until March 31st at midnight, where he will go after that. That's certainly up to the Secretary.
Okay. And then when he, I realize you weren't here for it, but hopefully since you've been back, you've been read in on the situation. He, in his farewell parting remarks from the podium there, he talked about how his commission would expire as Secretary of State at midnight on March 31st. Does that mean that he is not resigned or not planning to resign formally?
So the formal resignation process, as I understand it, is a process itself. The Secretary still retains the title of Secretary of State. He has delegated the responsibilities, the day-to-day responsibilities and duties to our Deputy Secretary, John Sullivan. Deputy Secretary Sullivan is carrying out all the meetings and duties and the paperwork that the Secretary would normally handle.
Right, I got that. But what about, in terms of resigning, is he not resigning?
Well, he retains the title of Secretary of State. He is still here in the building. He and the President, you know, have an understanding, and I'm just not going to get into the private conversation between the Secretary and the President.
Well, I'm not asking you for details of a private conversation. I just want to know if, like every previous Secretary of State, when they have finished, they have, you know, submitted a letter of resignation if it going into a second term. Secretary Clinton did that. Mm-hmm. And Secretary Powell did that both. So I'm just wondering if he's actually going to submit some kind of formal letter of resignation, or if he's not.
I'd be happy to take that question. Okay. I can just tell you he retains the title of Secretary of State. Then, he is here in the building. The Deputy Secretary is handling all the day-to-day responsibilities.
Okay. So if that, so last one, if the Deputy Secretary is handling all the day-to-day responsibilities, what exactly is the Secretary doing?
Well, when someone would leave the building, especially someone of that stature and who has that important portfolio that the Secretary of State had, there's a lot of ongoing paperwork and things that need to be completed. Ethics reports that need to be finalized, various details, and he's going to help to oversee an orderly transition to nominee Mike Pompeo, as we hope he will become go through the process and become get through the process and become our next Secretary of State.
Are there really 15 days, more than half a month of 16, 17 days
this
of
paperwork? This is the arrangement that's paperwork? Worked out between the Secretary and the White House.
Okay. I have a follow-up on that one. Is he focused on, can he make any decisions during this time, or is that all?
All of his day-to-day responsibilities, his key meetings, having the ability to sign off on particular pieces of information, that is all being handled by the Deputy Secretary at this time.
Has it been a conversation, do you know, with Mr. Pompeo, between Mr. Pompeo and Mr. Tillerson?
I know that they have plans to talk, that Secretary Tillerson has plans to talk to Deputy Pompeo, and I know they look forward to that conversation.
And has any delegation from Mr. Pompeo's office been here to kind of just kick things off?
We have staff-to-staff conversations with Director Pompeo's staff members at the department where he is right now, and we're having ongoing meetings.
And what specifically are they talking about?
Well, we would have a lot to talk about, including a transition.
So kind of staffing transitions or specific issues he wants to be briefed on?
I can imagine, as you can imagine, anytime you have a potentially, if this happens with the U.S. Senate, having somebody new come into the building, you have a lot of details that need to be worked out, briefing materials, papers, staffing questions, and things of the sort. So there are a lot of conversations that we'd have.
Thank you.
Okay. Hey, Andrew.
Just to follow up, hi, Heather. Couple of questions about that, and then I want to go on to this, to one other issue, related issue. Where is Mike Pompeo working? Is he working as DCI, and is that where his office will be, or will he have a transition office after March 31st, if not before, here in the State Department?
I can't speak to what he's doing in his day-to-day responsibilities over at Central Intelligence Agency. That would have to be answered by his staff. But we will provide a transition office if they would like one. We have the ability to do that. That is normal. That is something that is typically done. And so we will provide
that. And do you know who is going to be a Sherpa, if you will, for his confirmation process?
I have no information on that. But we are in close conversation with his staff and his colleagues.
I wanted to ask you about a release of letters today to John Sullivan.
We'll come back to that. Does anyone have any questions, any additional questions about the transition? Okay, go right ahead then.
The letters to John Kelly and to John Sullivan from Congressman Engel and Cummings, so Foreign Relations and Oversight, regarding a whistleblower report about political pressure from outside groups as well as White House officials and the former chief of staff here and her deputy on career civil servants as well as foreign service officers to clean house, if you will, and get rid of or sideline people who are perceived as not being politically on board with the Trump agenda. Can you address that?
I can tell you that we received that letter from Congress. The State Department regards those types of communications very seriously. We take those seriously. We always get back in touch with those members of Congress who ask questions for us. I've seen that letter. I've just received it. We will comply with Congress's request. We don't have any additional information to share on that at this time.
Have you personally experienced or witnessed that kind of political pressure from outside groups?
I have not.
On your colleagues here?
I have not, and I want to be very clear about this. I've been in this job for almost a year now. I have had the opportunity to work with many career civil servants, foreign service officers, and contractors here at the State Department. I have found my colleagues to be extremely professional. Those on staff who have been here for many years, I have found them almost blind to politics. They may not always like the policy that they are asked to advance on behalf of this administration and the American people, but my personal experience has been that people have done that and handled it in a very professional manner.
But the question
and that
is,
would go from the civil servants to foreign service officers to our contractors as well.
No, the question is whether you have perceived that some of those professional people whom you describe have been pressured by outside
I
groups
have not.
Through the chief of staff and her deputy.
I have not. This is the first that I've heard of it in this letter.
Can we move on? How is the State Department preparing for the upcoming summit between President Trump and Kim Jong-un in this particular moment of transition between two Secretary of State? Is the state still involved in preparations?
We certainly are. And let me back up for a minute, because the last time I saw you all was on Thursday.
Yeah.
And last Thursday was the day that the Republic of Korea met with the president and many others at the White House. You'll recall at the time we talked about how our Deputy Secretary John Sullivan was in that meeting. He was in the meeting with the Oval Office when that idea was presented by the South Koreans to sit down and have a talk with the North Koreans. So from that moment, when the Deputy Secretary came back to the State Department that evening, he pulled together a small group of staff members and he provided a debrief. What came out of that meeting? Not all of that I will be able to provide to you, but I can tell you that he pulled in our Acting Assistant Secretary, Susan Thornton, Mark Lambert, who's on our North Korea desk and is very well respected here, as is Susan. I entered that meeting and a few other people as well, in which we talked about State Department's role. First, I can say that we were very pleased to have received the information because we look forward to having these meetings. This will all be spearheaded by the White House, but the State Department's role in this will be what the State Department normally would do. We have massive staff, which is good at handling the logistics, providing any policy support that the White House should need, providing staff members, providing guidance, translation services, all the things that you would expect that would come into planning a summit meeting. After that brief meeting with Deputy Secretary Sullivan, we went into Susan Thornton's office, where about 20 members of her staff from the East Asia Pacific staff started pulling together ideas and giving orders for different individuals to undertake certain actions. The exact details of what was given, I'm not going to be able to tell you, but they went straight to work. These people worked very hard. They didn't skip a beat. They all knew what their jobs, responsibilities, and roles would be to start planning. So from the very moment that our Deputy Secretary came back here from the White House, they started working on this.
And is the White House involving them and getting them their feedback? And
well, they certainly are. I mean, look, this thing can't be done with just a handful of people alone. Other departments, other agencies will be involved in this as well, just as other departments and agencies were at the president's meeting with the Republic of Korea.
And just a follow-up, yeah. Did the U.S. get some direct message from your own channels of communication from North Korea since the announcements last week?
Not that I am aware of. I do not believe that to be the case.
You still didn't have any direct message from North Korea saying that they are willing to discuss the nuke with you?
That is the agreement that Kim Jong-un provided to the Republic of Korea. That information was presented to us, and so we are going forward in full faith and understanding that a meeting will go forward.
And that doesn't worry you not hearing from Pyongyang at the moment?
No, it does not. It does not. Okay. Anything else on North Korea? Okay. Okay. Hold on a second. Hey, Kylie.
So it seems like right now the North Korean foreign minister is heading to Sweden, which, as you're aware, is our protecting power, to meet with his counterpart. Is this a preliminary step for the U.S.-North Korea summit? And if so, will Acting Assistant Secretary Susan Thornton or Mark Lambert travel to Sweden to catch the North Korean foreign minister?
Yep. So our understanding is that there is a meeting taking place between North Korea and the Swedes. We don't have any indication that that meeting is about what we anticipate to be a meeting between the United States, other parties, and North Korea. I'd have to refer you to the government of Sweden for any specifics on that, but we are not sending any representation. Okay? Anything else on that? Hey, Josh.
I guess I'm a little confused about, you know, how much credibility foreign countries right now should put in mm-hmm. to the statements that are coming out of this building, considering that the guy that runs this place was just fired. I mean, for instance, you know, the president was very clear that one of the reasons he fired the secretary was they viewed the Iran deal differently. You've got Brian Hook, his policy architect, heading off to talk with the Europeans as mm-hmm. this new guy's coming in who clearly sees it very differently. So if you're a foreign government right now, should they be taking the comments from you and others here in this building as policy, or is that all going to change?
Let me address the issue of the meetings that Brian Hook is attending, our policy planning director. He's attending some JCPOA meetings today. He attended some JCPOA meetings last week, and I believe also the week before. The policy that Director Hook is advancing is the policy of this administration. It's not the policy of the Secretary of State. It's the policy of the administration. That includes identifying the malign activities that Iran has been involved with for many, many years. Our European partners and allies, they understand the totality of Iran's bad behavior, and that's one of the things that Director Hook is discussing with them today at those meetings. So I just want to be clear that Brian is talking about the overall administration policy. And that policy is an administration policy that is directed by the White House. So there's no space there, if you will. In terms of other countries and how other countries should regard us right now, let me make something clear. This building and what we do at the State Department is bigger than any one individual. Think of the numbers of secretaries of state that we have had over the centuries that the State Department has been around. We advance the values, the policy priorities of the President of the United States. The work of the State Department goes on all across the world today. So just because our Secretary, Secretary Tillerson, will no longer be the Secretary of State as of March 31st, does not mean that we hit the pause button. It is the policy of this administration that we are advancing, and our people are hard at work.
And relatedly, the overhaul of the State Department that we've discussed so much over the last year, does that essentially end with the end of Secretary Tillerson's tenure, or do you expect that to continue in similar form?
Sure. And what you're referring to is the redesign. We call it the Impact Initiative in its current phase. That information will be bundled together, and we will provide that to Director Pompeo. He can take a look at it and choose what he wants to do with it. There are some things in there that are absolutely no-brainers, like upgrading our IT systems. You all have tried to email us sometimes, and our IT system, our computers have just been basically broken. So I would certainly imagine... Or they what?
Or they go straight to Moscow.
I will imagine that that would probably be something that he would retain, but that is his choice to look at the Impact Initiative and see what he wants to keep.
Just a follow-up on North Korea.
Okay, yeah.
Sure. There was a report today that we reported on from the panel of experts on sanctions led by Hugh Griffiths from the United Nations. It's a year-long study, and it says that sanctions are working, but it describes in detail at least $200 million of cheating by pirating ships that are redesigned or reflagged at mm-hmm. sea, cheating by North Korea through embassies around the world, the supply of ballistic missiles and possibly chemical weapons material to Syria, to Myanmar, and to other countries, mm-hmm. and does not even get into what we have separately reported, which is hundreds of millions of dollars of cyber crime, giving hard currency to the regime. The question is, with so much cheating, mm-hmm. how does the United States go into negotiations knowing that credibly so many hundreds of millions of dollars are going into the weapons program and other ways to get around the sanctions?
Well, I think first I would say whether we like it or not, there are countries around the world that are cheaters. doesn't mean that we can't deal with them. North Korea has posed a grave threat, not just to the region, but also to the world. This administration designed its maximum pressure campaign more than a year ago. We are advancing and continuing to push that maximum pressure campaign. That includes, and you touched on this, talking with many countries around the world about their guest worker programs, for example, when North Korea has North Korean citizens who are working in an individual country on construction projects, perhaps, or other things, and that money, instead of going to the individual, goes back to the North Korean regime. That money, we believe, goes into its illegal nuclear and ballistic missile programs. That is why we've pushed this maximum pressure campaign so hard. The maximum pressure campaign has brought the Kim Jong-un regime to the table. Now we are at the place where we can begin to have talks about having talks. So I think that that is certainly a good sign. Are there countries like North Korea that can skirt sanctions and get away with things like you mentioned accurately, false flagging ships, where ships appear to come from one country, but yet they really came from another, all designed as a way to get money into the North Korean regime? That's a tremendous concern of ours, and that's why we keep, not only through the State Department and our maximum pressure campaign, but also at the United Nations to continue to orchestrate and impose sanctions, and we continue to ask countries all around the world to make sure that they are in compliance and fully implementing the sanctions that the UN and other countries have voted on. Okay? Okay. Yeah. Sure.
What is the status of Joseph Yun's position? Is there any effort at the moment to fill it? Is that active, or is that waiting for Mr. Pompeo to come in? And has he been asked to reconsider his retirement, given the development since he decided to retire?
So Ambassador Yun has decided to retire. Ambassador Yun has had a long career, a long distinguished career here at the State Department. We have many others who have had, or who have, long distinguished careers at the State Department. To think that Ambassador Yun is the only person who can handle the issues related to North Korea is simply false. We have many other people, including people of a higher rank, if you will, who are capable of handling these issues. And as I witnessed in the meeting in Susan Thornton's office just 1 week ago, these people are prepared and are ready to have these talks and deal with negotiations with North Korea. So I'm fully confident in the capabilities of our colleagues, who, in fact, are even more senior than Ambassador Yun was. One thing I'd like to say about our my colleagues in East Asia Pacific Bureau. They are people who toil behind the scenes. They are not showboats. They are not people who run out in front of cameras and want to make it known to the world that this is what they do. They work hard. They keep their noses down. They keep their heads down. And they do their jobs, not asking for credit and not looking for attention. I think that is part of the reason why so many in the media will look at Ambassador Yun and think, oh my goodness, he must be the only one who can handle North Korea. Well, that is simply not the case.
So does that mean that that position is ended?
I can tell you right now that Susan Thornton and Mark Lambert are fulfilling the duties of that role. I don't have any announcements to make at this time. As you know, it is very likely that we will have a new secretary, Director Pompeo, coming in, and he will have the ability to choose, as would any other secretary, make some of these staffing decisions. Yeah.
You weren't suggesting that Ambassador Yun was some kind of a showboat.
No, not at all. But you all, many of you, asked me a million questions about Joe Yun like he's the second coming of Christ. For goodness sakes, there are many capable people here. Who could,
well,
as you know what?
Are you
as
absolutely 100% sure he is not?
I am certain he is not.
Sure? Okay.
I'm certain he is not. We have many people here who have relationships and who have negotiated with North Korea in the past. You may not know them, you may not know who they are, but we do have those people. I want to be clear about that.
Do you have, maybe in your guidance, I'm just wondering if you have any update about consular access the Swedes might have gotten to the Americans who are still held?
I'm not aware. As you know, Sweden is our protecting power in North Korea. So they have assisted us in the past with American citizens. There are three American citizens who are still being unjustly held in North Korea. The safety and security of Americans is always our top priority. When this president took office, he was very clear with the State Department that that would be his top issue. That,
right.
North Korea, and also safety and security of Americans, North Korea, and then also combating and defeating ISIS.
Right, but you're not aware if there's been any recent access from
I'm not aware of that. Okay.
Hop back to the transition really quickly.
Yeah.
there is a discrepancy out there. I'm hoping you can just set down for the record this issue on Tuesday, the competing accounts between the White House and the State Department on how the Secretary came to learn that he was being fired. Now, former Undersecretary Goldstein said that he had no idea this was occurring. He did not know. The White House offered a competing narrative, which was that he had been called by the Chief of Staff, John Kelly, while he was in Africa at 2 in the morning and then spent and was told to come home early to either resign or be fired. So can you square those two competing narratives?
Some of these conversations were had strictly between the White House and between the Secretary of State. I can tell you that the Secretary received a call on Friday. And beyond that, I think we have a lot of issues in the world that are going on, important and meeting issues that we can discuss. Our undersecretary will be leaving. He will be departing. And so I'm not going to get in the middle of what the White House and what the secretary discussed.
Was he asked to leave because of that statement?
I'm not going to comment on somebody's personal
career. And can you just, I mean, you don't want to square those two. I mean, because this sort of gets to issues of his legacy, right? Like There is a White House version, and then there's also a State Department version, which is sort of his version. But you sort of have the White House basically calling him, saying that the Secretary's account of what happened is not true.
Here's what I can tell you, that the White House Chief of Staff Kelly called Secretary Tillerson while he was traveling in Africa on Friday, and I'll leave it at that.
Can we move on?
Hey, Rich.
Is the United States State Department discussing with NATO allies potential multilateral response to the use of NERD agent in the United Kingdom by Russia?
When you say multilateral response, could you be more specific?
Would the United States join with other NATO allies in responding or retaliating against that, or is the U.S. Going to let the U.K. respond?
Well, I think in part we already did. NATO put out a statement, the 29 NATO members expressing their grave concern with Russia's use of chemical weapons in that attack against an operative in the UK. So I think we've all spoken with one voice. There was also a statement today that was put out by the US, the UK, and other countries. It was a Quad statement that was put out earlier today by the White House. Let me read a part of that. In it, it says that we abhor the attack that took place in Salisbury. We express our sympathies for all of them and our admiration to the UK police and emergency services for their courageous response. This use of a military-grade nerve agent of a type developed by Russia constitutes the first offensive of the use of a nerve agent in Europe since World War II. It is an assault on UK sovereignty, and any such use by a state party is a clear violation of the Chemical Weapons Convention and a breach of international law. It threatens the security of all of us. The United Kingdom briefed thoroughly its allies, and it is highly likely that Russia was responsible for the attack, and it goes on.
That's not retaliation.
With the retaliation
that
the United States pursued after the assassination of Kim Jong-nam, is that something that would fall under the same classification?
It certainly could, because you're talking about Russian compliance and whether Russia is compliant with its treaty obligations. And a use of a chemical weapon is in violation of that. Now, as you may recall, because you ask about the killing of Kim Jong-un's half-brother, right? Not stepbrother, half-brother. And then we put in place some sanctions about a week or 2 weeks ago related to that use. There was a gap in time between which he was killed and the time that sanctions were put in place.